Good evening.
Good evening.
Doing Parshas Toldos, Parshas Summary. Last week's Parsha ended with a recording of Yishmael's offspring. You recall Yishmael had two children. Avram had two children. He had from his maid, from Hagar, he had Yishmael. And then about 13, 14 years later, he had Yitzhak from Sarah. And in last week's parsha, we saw Sarah passed away, and we have a recording of Avram's passing in last week's parsha. But really, Avram is going to pass away chronologically in our parsha. Really, Avram passes away in Parshas Toldos. It's recorded in last week's parsha. Our parsha begins with Ele Toldos Yitzhak ben Avram. These are the offsprings of Yitzhak, where the Eile told us, we're continuing. We've said the offsprings of Yishmael. We've recorded that Yishmael also had 12 Nesiim, just like Am Yisrael is going to have 12 tribes and 12 Nesiim. And now we're recording the offsprings of Yitzhak, the son of Avram, and then the Pasuk repeats, Avram bore Yitzhak, Avram holid this Yitzhak. And holid, we mentioned on Sunday, could mean that he taught him, not only that he bore him, but also that he brought him up, he taught him the ways of Hashem, he educated him. Our sages tell us that people were talking. People were saying, you know, all the years Sarah was with Avram, they didn't have any kids. And then she was taken away by Ahimelech for a short period and she becomes pregnant. So people were saying, it's not really Avram's kid. Hayu leitzanei hadar, the jokers of the generation were saying that. So God made it that Yitzhak had a special countenance, that he appeared like Avram, and everyone who saw Yitzhak would say, oh, that's Avram's kid. Sometimes we think, what difference does it make what people say? So there's a biography written by the Netziv's nephew. I forgot its name right now. Forgot what it's called. The Torah Tmima wrote a biography, many volumes, in which he records many things. One of the things he records there is he says that he was once about to mail out an envelope, and his uncle, the Netziv, came in and saw the envelope with the stamp upside down. So his uncle told him, why is the stamp upside down? So he said, you know, when I put on the stamp, I didn't realize that it was upside down. And now, what am I going to do? I'll take it off and put it back on, right? So he said, but the mailman will laugh at you. So he said, what do I care if the mailman laughs at me? So the mailman will laugh at me, fine. My time is more valuable. So he said, no. You have to care even if the mailman laughs at you. Take the time, put it on right. And I think that's one of the lessons we mentioned on Sunday, that it's important, v'yitem nikim elokim meyisrael, that we have to be careful to be clean in the eyes of man, not only in the eyes of God. It's not enough that a person knows what I'm doing is right. A person has to try to find favor in people's eyes. And we see over here that God made a special thing that people won't be talking. It wasn't good that people were talking. We're going to see that when Yosef does the most pious act, Yosef HaTzadik, he runs away from his master's wife. She grabs his robe, in those days they wore a long robe, and he slips out and runs out. So he runs out into public square naked, because he's got nothing, I mean, she took the robe. And then she says, you know why he ran out like that? Because he wanted to do something wrong. So everyone was talking, all of Mitzrayim was buzzing. Ooh, that slave, that Ivri, look at what he did. So God cared. God said, such a tzaddik, people are talking about him. So God caused things to happen in politics. The servants of Paro, one messes up with the bread, one messes up with the wine. Why? So our sages tell us the same thing. God didn't want people talking. Yosef was a pious person. He did nothing wrong. But people were talking. And we have to know that we have to concern ourselves with what people say.
Yeah, but the stamp. No.
What?
The stamp, upside down stamp. It's not going to bother anybody.
No, okay, that was an example. I agree, it's not going to bother anyone, but we have to be concerned. Our sages tell us, you want to know what a person is? Look, maha briyot omrot alav. See what people say about that person. So it's important. We have to see what people say when we verify for shiduchim. We hear what people say, we call up, we check information. So it's true, sometimes people say things and they're not based, and a person has to do his best to keep his name clean. Our sages tell us that one of the great crowns that a person can gain is Keter Shem Tov. Keter Shem Tov overcomes many of the other crowns, the crown of a good name. We have to try and maintain a good name, and here we see that God made a special thing, that Yitzhak looked like Avram. Now we have another Medrash. The Medrash says that when Yitzhak would walk into the rooms, people would stand up, they think it was Avram walking in. And Avraham said, you know, I'm an old man. I've done, he's a fine person, but people should recognize it's me, it's not him. So Avraham prayed to God. He said, God, please let there be a difference between a person that's old and a person that's young. And God said, okay. God said, it's a good idea and I'll start with you. So God made Avraham look old, white hairs. The Medrash says that since then there are other things that could cause white hairs. One's wife, one's children, when things go bad, if there's bad parnasa, other things can cause a person to have white hairs. But Avraham asked that he get white hairs, that he look like an old man, so people can tell the difference between him and Yitzhak. We'll see that he's the old man. He's Avraham. But anyways, Avraham had Yitzhak, and Yitzhak looked alike in order to get people to stop talking. Yitzhak was 40 years old. He took Rivka. We mentioned on Sunday that Rivka was either 3 years old or 14 years old. And Rivka, the Pasuk stresses where she comes from. Rivka was the daughter of Bisuel the Arami. Why does it stress the Arami? So our sages say that it has to be read Arami are the letters of Ramai. We find sometimes the Torah changes letters around. Kesev, Kisba, Keves. We have different words that sometimes the letters get interchanged. So Arami, our sages said, is from the word Ramai, that her father was a swindler, her brother was a swindler, and Rivka grew up among these people, and she was a fine person. Our sages say, why was Avram so careful to take a wife for a son from his family? We find that when Eliezer comes to Rivka's family, so Laban says, don't worry, I took out the idols from the house, you could come in. So that means till Eliezer came, there were idols in the house. Why was it so important that he take a girl who's from family that's serving idols, his family, they serve idols better? So the Ran says, no, when we look for a shidduch, when it comes to beliefs, philosophies, that a person can develop. But when it comes to a person's traits, a person's midos, that also a person has to develop, but that's more ingrained, that's a person's home. And that's why a person should try to seek a home, a wife who comes from a home where they have good traits. Because that's going to be the base. That's where she's starting from. Every person could fix his traits. That's true. And every person is responsible for fixing his traits. But every person should try, at least on ourselves, we don't have a choice where we come from. But when we're looking for a wife, we want to find a woman that comes from a house where they have good traits. So Avram knew his family were serving idols. He wasn't thinking he'll get Rivka who's not serving idols. That wasn't his thought. His thought was on philosophies we could discuss, we could convince a person. But on traits, it's a much harder job. That's a person has to work his whole life, and a person has a starting point where he's working from. Rav Dessler develops a point. He says every person has nekudas habchira. When we walk down the street, so a person who was once a robber, when he sees a watch on the table, he has to keep holding himself back. I want that. You and I, hopefully, when we see a watch, we don't have that problem. Where we don't walk down the street and see an open window and think, gee, I could jump in, grab something, and walk by. So our nekudat abchira, our place where we have to make decisions, should I sin or shouldn't I sin, is on a different level. A person tries to keep moving that level up. There's always going to be a level at which a person has to overcome himself. The question is, where is it? Am I containing myself? You interrupted me, I'm going to strangle him, so I have to contain myself not to kill him. Or, I don't feel like murdering. I have to contain myself on other things, not to interrupt people, to be nice to people, to be nice to the guy who steps on my foot at a wedding. Or each person has his level. And we always have to try and work to make things ingrained and to make the level of Bechira a higher level. But Avram wanted for his wife, for his son Yitzchak, a girl from his family where at least the traits, the midot, would be on a high level. And that's what he got. He got Rivka. But Rivka still came from a home where they weren't, she was the daughter of a rasha. So when Yitzchak and his wife Rivka, they go to Haran Moriah, that great mountain where Adam HaRishon was created from, that great mountain where Yitzchak was bound and he offered his life to Hashem, where the Beis HaMikdash was going to be built. So they go over there after 20 years that they don't have children. They go to that mountain to pray to Hashem. So even though Yitzchak's praying and his wife is praying, and you should know that one of the greatest tests and trials that a couple could undergo is not having children. Until a person experiences it, he can't understand the pain of being married, wanting to have children, and not having children. In 20 years, Yitzhak and Rivka are married and they don't have children. And even though she's pouring her heart out, and for the woman it's always harder than for the man, he's pouring his heart out, he gets answered. God accepts his prayer because he was a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, and there's what to be said for that. As much as we could work, our children, if we'll merit, they'll be tzaddikim, the sons of tzaddikim. But for ourselves, we are what we are. There's nothing we could do. And the tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, has greater strength. Yitzchak prays, Bni chaye umizoni. The Gemara says, children, the amount of life, the longevity, how long a person is going to live, and how much parnasa a person is going to have, lo bizchus atalia milsa, that's not contingent on a person's merits. A person could be a very pious person and he'll be poor. A person could be a very pious person, he won't have kids. A person could be a very pious person and he'll die young. Bni chayum zoni lo bizchus atalia milsa, ela bimazal talia milsa. That depends on the mazal, person's mazal. So we know that Jews can overcome their mazal. That's what God taught Avram. Your mazal, Avram, is that you don't have children. But if you change your name, there are certain things a person could do to overcome his mazal. He could do tshuva. He could give tzedakah. He could pray. If he changes his name, he could change the country he lives in. Mishaneh makom, he goes to a different place. So there are different things a person can do to overcome his mazal. The best is to do tshuva. Do tshuva, to daven. People always try to find the easy way out. They add a name. But the most powerful is to pray, to do tshuva, to learn Torah, to give tzedakah. So Yitzchak says to God, he says, Vayetar. Yetar means to pray. Yetar means to do something a lot. But Yetar in Aramaic is also to give wealth. Yitzchak said to God, I'm a wealthy person. Take the wealth, give me kids. I don't need the wealth. I'd rather have kids. Yitzchak prays to God and he says, give me kids from this woman. I don't want to marry another woman. I want from Rivka kids. I know I'm supposed to have kids. You promised my father that I'll have kids and I'm the one that's going to have the Jewish people. I want them from Rivka. Yitzchak was barren and his wife was barren. They both physically were not supposed to have children. If you think about it, it's amazing. The Jewish people, from their formation, were not supposed to form. Avraham was barren, Sarah was barren. They both shouldn't have had kids. Physically, biologically, medically, they should not have been able to have children. Yitzchak, his son, was not supposed to have kids. Rivka, his wife, also. The way they were built, if they would have gone to the fertility experts, they all would have said, no kids, forget it, adopt them. You're not going to have them. And we're going to see, by Yaakov also, there are problems with his wife. The Jewish people, from the very beginning, have to overcome nature. And that's what happens. God accepts Yitzchak's prayers, and Yitzchak has children from his wife, from Rivka. Why did God make the Avos, our forefathers, have such trouble with fertility? So our sages say that God wanted them to pray. And we have to know that every time we have a test in life, a person could look at it and say, Tagal, this Rav Elisha Vishlitsky once told me, Tagal, God's coming down against me, he's punishing me, he's whapping me in the face. And a person could look at it as an etgah. He could look at it as a goal. It's something I have to overcome. We always have that choice. And we have to think of a nisayon, like lashon nisa, to uplift. Nisayon, a person could think, I'm being tested. A person could think, God wants to uplift me. I have to overcome it. I have to take the pain or the trouble that's troubling me and use it positively. I'll use it in prayer. I'll use it to better myself. So Yitzchak and his wife, they pray and God accepts their prayers, and his wife becomes pregnant. She becomes pregnant and she feels like she's breaking up. The kids are beating her up inside. She asks the other women about the pain of being pregnant and they say, no, it's never this bad. It's bad, but not like this. So she says, okay, then what's going to be? So she goes to seek out God. Some say she went to the Beis Medrash of Shame. Some say she went to Avraham Avinu. Some say she went to Aram Moriah. She went back to that mountain where her prayers were accepted and she started praying. She said, God, what's going to be? What am I living for? And God tells her, either through Avram, through Shem, or directly to her, there are different midrashim as to whether Rivka was a Nevi'ah or not. When the Gemara in Megillah enumerates the seven females who were Nevi'ahs, it does not enumerate Rivka. But the Medrash does enumerate Rivka. So there are different opinions as to whether she herself got Nevu'ah. And God tells her, Shnei goyim bevitnech. There are two great nations in your womb, and they're going to split off, and they're going to be fighting forever. And this is a sign of the fight. And this shows us that the concept of Esav soneli Yaakov, the hatred that is built in the world between the Jewish people and those that represent Esav in the world, That's not something that we're going to be able to overcome. For generations, people thought, you know, if we'll be more like them, if we'll do this or we'll do that, then there'll be peace between us. And our tradition is that from the womb, from the time Rivka was pregnant with Esav and Yaakov, there was hatred. And it's going to be that way till the end of time. It's not something that we'll be able to overcome. We have to learn, and we'll see in Parshas Vayishlach, one of the lessons we learn from in 2 weeks, the parsha of how Yaakov faces up to Esav, is how we're supposed to deal with this hatred. But we have to also be aware that this hatred is there, and it's always going to be there. It's not going to change. And that's one of the lessons we're supposed to learn from the fact that inside the womb, Rivka's feeling, I'm falling apart, they're fighting. The kids are already fighting, they're still inside and they're fighting. Yeah, because they're going to be fighting.
Midrash says that she was supposed to be the mother of the 12th tribe.
Yeah, I don't know that Midrash.
No?
Could be said. I'm not saying don't say it. I just don't know.
I didn't hear it, no.
No?
I read it from two different places that she complained. She said, if I knew it was going to be this painful, I wouldn't have prayed for her kids.
Yeah.
And that God punished her.
That fits. There was a gematria I kept wondering about. She says, Lama Ze. And Ze is always the gematria 12 that represents the Shvatim. And I was always thinking, what is that representing? Why was she saying, why about the 12? According to what you're saying, it fits. That's what she was saying. And maybe that's why she said, okay. Thank you. So God tells her there are two different nations in your stomach. And these two are going to split, and you should know that one is going to constantly overcome the other. Our tradition is that if someone tells you that Esav's doing well and the Jewish people are doing well, don't believe him. Esav's doing well and the Jewish people aren't doing well, that could be. The Jewish people are doing well and Esav isn't doing well, that could be. But that they're both up on top, that can't be. That's against nature. One is going to be on top. The prophet tells us that when the capital of Esav, the city of Tzor, when they heard that the enemies are coming to destroy Jerusalem, so the city of Tzor said, I'll get filled from their destruction. It's great. The Jewish people will be destroyed, and I'll get filled. And that's the idea. That's the way it's always going to be. When we go down, they automatically shoot up. It's good for them. And if we do tshuva, if we go up, so then automatically they have to go down.
Sorry, Rob. The original blessing was that if they worked together, that they would like in Noah's kids, that when Noah blessed his kids, he blessed that if he was talking about the Roman descendants of the Romans, which was that if they worked together, helping each other, the Jews and the Romans, that they would flourish.
I don't know.
No?
I don't know what you're referring to. I don't know. I know many sources that say the other way, that the destruction of the Second Temple came because we got the Romans involved in our politics. And that's, the Rishonim say that on the Torah, they say it in Daniel, say it in Shir HaShirim. There are many places where we learn out that our destruction began when we involved the Romans in our empire, when we made a peace treaty with them. It took 100 years, but that's where it began. But what you're referring to, I don't know.
After the children of Noah picked up.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Show me inside afterwards. Well, she gives birth, and we have twins. The first one comes out. He looks like a grown man. He's got a beard. He's got hair on his back, hair on his chest. He's a hairy guy. So everyone says, boy, this is like a ready-made man. Asui, he's made. So they gave him the name Esav. Who gave him the name Esav? Those that are standing around. Yitzchak saw him and he said, uh-oh, this one's red. That's a sign, not such a good sign. He could use it for good. Our sages say that a person that's born in Mazan Ma'adim, in the constellation of, I guess that would be, I don't know what it is in English. So he's going to have to spill blood. He's going to have a tendency to spill blood. So he could be a murderer. He could also be a shochet, he could also be a mohel, he could be all kinds of things. So a person could use it for good. But when Yitzhak saw this, the Medrash says he and the Satan together gave Esav the name Esav. And afterwards, his brother came out, he's holding on to his heel, and that's a sign that in the end, Yaakov's going to overcome. And they called him Yaakov, and Yitzhak is 60 years old.
What does Yaakov mean?
Yaakov could mean he will swindle, Okba is in a swindling fashion. Yaakov could also mean he will be at the heel. Akev is a heel. Which one it means, we're going to have to discuss throughout Yaakov's lifetime, which one is he living up to. We're going to see that in the beginning it seems like everything Yaakov does is underhanded. That seems to be the completion of the name Yaakov, like Okba. But in the future we'll see that's the great thing of Yisrael. Yaakov is Akev, and Yisrael are the letters of Li Rosh, Yisrael. And he ends up being in a straightforward, overcoming fashion, not underhanded. We'll get to that. That's next week. They grow up. And until they grow up, they both get the same chinuch. And according to Rav Hirsch, that was a mistake that Yitzchak made in chinuch. That he gave them the same chinuch and they should have gotten different chinuch. Chanuch lanar al pi darko. We have to know that each child has different needs. One child you could sit and learn with, another child you have to play ball with. Another child you have to offer him more treats in order to learn. And a different child you have to learn more medrash with. You can't expect him to sit down and learn all the time Gemara and other things. Each child, we have to know how to be mechanech him slowly and according to what fits him. We think that there's a mold, especially the present chinuch system. There's a classroom, you have to sit down, every kid at this age learns this, and at that age learns that. And that's not the way the Torah tells us to be mechanech. It's a compromise which we reach because of the needs of the time. But it's a compromise, we're compromising on chinuch. The ideal way is that each child gets taught according to his level and his needs. Not that you put them all in the classroom, every kid at fifth grade starts Gemara. Who said he's ready to learn Gemara? Every kid learns Aleph Beis at the same age. They're not already at the same age. And the Torah didn't expect us to be mechanech this way. So until they reach the age of 13 or 15, it's unclear where they're headed. And then at the age of 15, one kid starts growing longer pace, starts having his tzitzis out, starts being dressed up like a very pious person. This kid is Esav. The other one, he maintains, it's enough, I'm the way I should be. But the one who keeps showing off, he's wearing the tzitzis where everyone could see, he's growing everything he wants to show, he's a big tzaddik, that's Esav. And Esav knows how to trick people, that's his trait, he knows how to look like he's kosher. Esav is like the pig has split hooves. On the inside, he doesn't chew his cud, he's not a kosher animal. On the outside, you look at him, he has split hooves. So the pig always shows up with split hooves. That's Esav. Whatever he does good, he shows everyone. Whatever people could see, he tries to look good. So Esav starts hunting, and Yaakov keeps learning the way his father wants him to. And Esav would walk behind the Beis Medrash, he'd learn something new that they said, he'd come home and tell his father, you know, we learned something new today. And he was able to trick his father. Yitzchak fell for it. And he'd feed his father from everything he hunted. And we know that when a person starts benefiting from someone, then he can't help it but lean towards that person. Mentioned before the Gemara about the person who came to the Amora and he said, I'll help you cross the water. He gave him a hand, he crossed the water, then he said, okay, what do you want? He said, I need you to judge me. He said, I can't judge you. You just helped me, I'm biased, that's it. Go find a different judge, I can't judge. Even a small assistance makes us biased. And if people think that by children, when we have children, oh, then we won't be biased, it's not so. Every parent has a certain nature and every child has a certain nature. And certain kids fit our nature better. And our natural inclination is to have a bias towards certain kids. And parents have to be aware of it and overcome it. Not to think, no, I'm fair to everyone. Be fair to everyone. But know that your natural inclination is not going to allow you to be fair to everyone. And Yitzchak loves Esav. And that love, our sages tell us, brought Esav's demise. That's what brought Esav's downfall. He didn't touch him enough. Okay, so you don't have to hit. But he didn't reprimand him the way he should have. Same thing with Avraham and Yishmael.
Rav,
yeah?
Noah's blessing says that Japheth's gift is important and beautiful, but only if it's placed in the service of the spiritual truth represented by Shem.
Okay.
Such is the beauty of Japheth, if the divorce from the tent of Shem, together they are perfection, notes and vision, separate they are tragedies that fill the histories of the world. So does that have any meaning?
That's an interesting explanation of a Gemara and Megillah, but let's discuss that if you want later. That's Parshas Noach. Rivka, she sees through it all. She sees Yaakov. She had the prophecy of what's going to happen, and she loves Yaakov. Esav used to have wrestling matches. Nimrod, remember the great king Nimrod? the great king who got that great cloak that God made for Adam Arishon. God made Adam Arishon a special coat, special garment. With that garment, you could overcome anyone you fight. You could hunt any animal. And that garment passed down the generations until finally Nimrod got it. We're skipping many stories, but we don't have time. And Nimrod and Esav would always have wrestling matches, Nimrod and his son. And one day, they said, today is the last match. Whoever wins kills the other one. And Nimrod won. This is a medrash. And Esav said, do me a favor, give me one more day. Don't kill me today. And he comes into Yaakov, and that day his grandfather Avram died, because the medrash says that on that day Esav started being a murderer, on that day Esav started being a rapist, on that day Esav started doing all kinds of terrible things. And Avram was promised that he'll die a good death, he'll reach good old age. It's not good old age when you see your grandson a murderer. So that's why Avram died at 175, even though he could have lived 5 more years, so he wouldn't see his grandchildren this way. So on that day, Esav comes in from the field and he's tired. So one medrash says he's tired. Well, he was doing a bunch of dirty things, so he was tired. The other medrash says he was tired because he just lost the wrestling match and he knows he's going to die tomorrow. So he sees Yaakov baking special beans. Yaakov's baking a chulit, lentils. And the reason he was baking them, our tradition is that when a person is in mourning, then the first meal, it's called Sudat Havra'a. Havra'a means to give someone a meal. And the first meal, a person gets fed from other people, and we give them round things to show them that death is a cycle in the world, and that just like a round thing is closed, the circle is closed, he should keep his mouth closed. He's in pain now, he might say the wrong things towards God. So that's why today in the United States they give bagels, in Israel, I don't know what round things they give, eggs, they give, an egg is round. So he was baking lentils, yeah. So, one major says he knew he was going to die because he just lost the wrestling match to Nimrod and he was supposed to die. Another major says that Esav says, I'm going to die because he says, you know, there was no more pious man than Grandpa. And if Avram died, then you know what? I don't stand a chance. He says, okay, I'm going to die. So he tells Yaakov, give me from this red stuff. And Esav was a red person. He's saying, I'm red, give me from the red food. And Yaakov tells him, no, I want your rights as a firstborn. Yitzchak's going to divide the land of Israel that he was promised into 3 sections. And the firstborn is going to get 2, and the other one's going to get 1. And you know what? That extra section is that burial ground, the Marasa Machpelah, where they just buried Avram. I want that extra portion. I want the rights to be firstborn. And Esav tells him, you know what? I'm going to die. What do I care where I'll be buried? You want that portion? You want the double portion of a firstborn? Fine. Give me, feed me. According to the other medrash, he's saying, tomorrow I'm dying. Do I care if I get double portion or I'm not? So Yaakov feeds him, and he says, let's cut a deal. Swear to me. They cut a deal, and then Yaakov tells him, you don't have to die tomorrow. I'll tell you what you do. When Nimrod comes to kill you, tell Nimrod, this is a medrash, doesn't say in the Torah, tells him, tell Nimrod, why should he get your beautiful clothing dirty? Take them off, and then come kill me. And when Nimrod gets those clothing off, then you'll be able to overcome him. And that's what happened. Nimrod took the clothing off, and then Esav was able to overcome him, and he killed him. And Esav took those wonderful clothing. Now Esav had a bunch of beautiful wives. Women who weren't faithful to Esav, women who were robbers, and Esav knew who he married. Esav was a man who spent his life taking other men's wives. But he had to look like his father, so his father got married at age 40. When he got married at age 40, when he was 40, he said, nah, it's respectable, I gotta get married. So he took wives at the age of 40. And he couldn't trust them with this wonderful garment. He knew who his wives were. So he kept it by his mother, by Rivka. Now these were clothing that were made by God. They were still from Gan Eden. These were the clothing that God gave Adam Arishon. But we're skipping. Let's go back to where we were. Esav sells his rights to the firstborn, his rights as a firstborn to Yaakov. And he scorns it. He walks out and laughs. Ha! What did he get and what did I get? I got a good meal. This is a trait of Esav. The trait of scorning is a terrible trait that the Jewish people are not supposed to have. Our sages tell us that in the future, the non-Jews are going to come and say, you didn't give us a Torah, give us a chance. And God is going to say, okay, I'll give you an easy mitzvah of sukkahs. You could build the sukkah, sit in the sukkah 7 days. And they'll all build the sukkah, and then God is going to take out a scorching sun, and it's going to be boiling hot in the sukkah, and they'll walk out of the sukkah, and they'll kick the sukkah, and they'll go back home. And then God will say, you see, you can't live up to Sukkah, so what do you want? That's why the Jews, all the years, they lived up to the mitzvah of Sukkah, and you're not. And then the Gemara asks, well, what do you mean? God tricked them. God made it especially hot. And we know that when it's especially hot, you don't have to sit in the Sukkah. They're okay that they left the Sukkah. So the Gemara says, well, first of all, sometimes for the Jews it's exceptionally hot on Sukkot too. And secondly, okay, so they left the Sukkah. For that, they wouldn't have lost everything, but they didn't have to kick the Sukkah. When they left the Sukkah and they kicked the Sukkah, for that God says you didn't have to kick the Sukkah. That shows that you're not interested. The Gemara says that a Jew, if he has a sick child, he could say, God, I'm going to give 1,000 shekels to tzedakah if my son gets better. I'm giving these 1,000 shekel to tzedakah so that my son gets better. That's called a tzaddik. He says, I'll give it if my son gets better. That's a tzaddik. So the Gemara quotes another source that says, no, you're not allowed to do that. So the Gemara says, yeah, it depends. For a Jew, he's allowed to do that. Because if his son dies, he won't turn to God and say, what'd you do to me? Oh, you, whatever. But a non-Jew, the Gemara says, won't do that. A non-Jew is not allowed to do such a vow. A non-Jew could give tzedakah, he could not give tzedakah. Because if he says, God, I'm giving this tzedakah on the condition that my son gets better. If his son doesn't get better, he won't be able to swallow that. He's going to rebel against God. When King Solomon builds the temple, when he builds the Beis HaMikdash, so he prays to God. He says, God, when the Jews pray to you, give each person what he deserves. If he deserves it, accept his prayer, and if not, don't. But the non-Jews, when they pray to you, I want you to answer them. Whatever they ask, give them. If they pray in the Beis HaMikdash, or they pray to the Beis HaMikdash through here, if they pray to you, God, you give them what they're asking for. Why? Because the same concept. They're not going to be able to accept it. They're not going to believe in it if it doesn't work. If they pray through the Beis HaMikdash and they don't get what they want, they'll say, you see, it doesn't work. So when a non-Jew prays, even if he doesn't deserve it, give it to him, God. They can't live up to this level. And we're going to see the same thing. When Yitzchak blesses Yaakov in this week's parasha, so Yitzchak tells Yaakov, V'iten lecho ha'elokim. May God who judges people give you blessing. He'll judge you. If you're fitting for it, you'll get it. If not, not. But when Esav walks in, so then Yitzchak tells him, Hinei mishmanei arz yemoshavecha umital ha'shamayim me'ar. May you get everything. May God bless you. He'll give you good food from the ground and rain from the heavens. He doesn't make it contingent on how Esav behaves. Because one of the traits of a Jew is that he could live up to things not going well. And when things don't go well, that's what the non-Jews call a Jewish conscience. He automatically says, you know, maybe I'm not fitting. Maybe I'm not right. That's a good trait. That's how a Jew is supposed to be. When things don't go well, he's not supposed to look up to God and say, what'd you do? He's supposed to look at himself and say, wait, hey, what did I do? And fix himself. And that's a trait of a Jew. That's one of the traits of a Jew. And that's why Esav over here, the Pasuk stresses when he loses the Bechorah, he scorns it. Ah, okay, I don't have the Bechorah. That's Esav. There was a famine. Yitzchak thinks back, you know, what did my father do when there was a famine? He traveled down to Egypt. So Yitzchak starts heading south. He goes to the Plishti territory, somewhere around where the Palestinians are today, on the western front. And he's on his way south, and God tells him, don't go down to Egypt. You have to stay here. You were on Hiram Maria. You're on a different level. You were offered as a sacrifice. You're special. You can't leave the Holy Land. And this is an important lesson. The Gemara tells us, one Amora records, he says, you know, I can't come close to my father. My father, if he'd eat meat on one day, he wouldn't eat milk the rest of the day. Till tomorrow, he wouldn't eat milk. He didn't wait not 2 hours, not 6 hours. Not, he didn't, the whole day, he wouldn't eat milk. And me, I don't live up to that. So why didn't he live up to that? He could also do that. You know, it's not such a big shtick, so you don't eat the rest of the day. Okay, so you don't eat milk, you eat other things. Because he knew that he wasn't on that level. We have to recognize when we read things about great people, not everything that we read is fitting for us to do. You see Rav Bigun, you see the Rosh Yeshiva. So you could learn from certain things he does, but not everything he does. Certain things are for him on his level. I'm not on that level. I don't have to do that. I shouldn't do it. It's foolish if I do it. Yitzchak said, my father went down to Mitzrayim, I'll go down to Mitzrayim. God said, no, you're a different person. You're on a different level. For your father, it was right to go down to Mitzrayim when there's a famine. For you, it's not right. That's one of the things we always have to focus on. When we learn something, a person tells us, you know, I asked the rabbi, he told me I should do this. Okay, maybe that's what's right for him in his given time, in his situation, on his level. You can't learn from someone else's question to a rabbi. If he asked him, you know, how do you put on tefillin? So he showed him how to put on tefillin. Chances are that's universal. But if you ask them, oh, what kashrus could I eat? What hechsher should I eat? So maybe he's supposed to eat certain hechsherim, and for me, on my level, I'm allowed to eat even more hechsher. Who said I have to live up to his standard? When I'll ask the rabbi, I'll get a different answer. Every person, halacha is individualistic, depending on the person, on the circumstance, and that's one of the things we see here. God tells Yitzhak, no, you don't go down to Mitzrayim, you stay here, I'll be with you, I'll bless you. Yeah? Yeah. Good question. It's a good question. We're not there yet. I don't think we'll get to that today, but Thursday we're going to continue the parsha, so we'll get that. That's a very good question. Avram lives in Gerar, and the people ask about his wife, so he gives the same answer his father did. He says, no, that's my sister. He was scared he'd get murdered over her. She was very good looking. One day Avimelech's look peeks through the window. He wants to see what's going on. So he peeks in through the window. Now think about it. Rivka should be now either in her late 20s or late 30s, right? We don't know exactly when the story happened. But we know that Rivka was married to Yitzchak 20 years. She got married either at the age of 3 or 14. So she was 23 when she had her first child, or 34. And now they've reached the age of 13 or 15, another 13 or 15 years. So now she's either 34 plus 15, she's either 49, or she's 23 plus 15, 38. And she's still a very good-looking woman because everyone wants her. And Avimelech peeks in through the window and he sees them like husband and wife. So he calls Yitzhak over, he says, what's going on here? She's your wife, you said she's your sister. We'll have to continue on Thursday. It's time for a reminder.